How do you do? You mind if we ask you to move? That's right, to leave those comfortable chairs and come with us right through the heart of Chicago's Loop into another world. A world of cheap hotels, taverns, honky-tonks, missions, and pawn shops, to the street of forgotten men and women. Forgotten, that is, until their minds and hearts, their very lives, are unshackled. From Chicago, the crossroads of America, the Pacific Garden Mission presents Unshackled, the unique dramatic series based on true stories taken directly from the files of the famous old Pacific Garden Mission. The lighthouse which for three quarters of a century has been offering the secret of a new life to the men and women of Chicago's Skid Row, but which now, through the medium of this broadcast, reaches up and out of Skid Row with this same new life toward those who walk in the darkness of mere intellect and knowledge along the avenues and boulevards of our world. Yes, Unshackled, the program you support, is being heard in many parts of our world and is changing lives wherever it is heard. Psychology tells us that a person acts and feels not according to what things are really like, but according to his mental image of what they are like. For example, the father image is one of kindness, strength, and justice. But when a person's actual father does not correspond with this universal father image, the child fights reality and can become mentally and physically ill. The child clings tenaciously to the normal conception of what his father should be. And within him, as a result of this conflict, neuroses come into being. And a neurosis is simply the result of the ego or the self having lost control of a part of the body or of the mind. Ego control, generally speaking, could be said to be self-control. When something shakes our self-control, we go to pieces. And these pieces could be called, in the nomenclature of psychology, neuroses. Now, neuroses can cause endless complications. The American Medical Association states conservatively that 60% of all illness is mental or emotional in origin. The neurosis in the life of the young man whose true story we bring you now caused extreme stuttering. In fact, although the condition is much improved, we are not able to portray him as telling his own story on this broadcast. Instead, here is Muriel Bremner to portray our writer-producer Eugenia Price as she tells this unusual true story right now on Unshackled.
Carl Sagitt was born of Jewish parents in Riga, Latvia, January 22, 1926. His mother became ill of pneumonia on the boat coming to America when Carl was only 3 years old, and she died in Detroit, Michigan, 3 weeks later. So Carl doesn't remember his mother at all. You see, right there, a big half of his normal personality growth was lopped off. He had no one to fill that mother image. But the real conflict began when Carl was old enough to resist and fear the unhappy, violent man who was his father. He had loved Carl's mother very much, and the shock of her death never left him. Mr. Sagitt hated life, and because it had hurt him so much, he wanted to grind it under his heel. This included the young, tender, formative personalities of his two sons, Carl and Daniel. But he had no wife, and there was nothing else to do but put the 3.5-year-old Carl in an orphan's home.
What else? What else is there to do but leave the boy?
No, I want to go with you.
You stay here whether you want to or not. What else is there to do? See that he has what he needs. I come again in a few months to see him.
At the orphan's home, he began to stutter. And by the time his father married again 2 years later, Carl, at the age of 5, rebellious and nervous and stuttering miserably, brought out the worst in his father.
Shut up, Carl.
Papa.
I said shut up. If you can't get it out, just keep silent.
I want to go with you.
No. Papa bring you home with your new mama and you act like a wild animal.
Take me with you, Papa.
I got no time for a crying brat in the tailor shop. I got to work 12 hours a day to make money to feed you. Stay with your new mama.
No!
Stop that infernal stuttering. Everybody tries to torture me. I go to work.
Carl's father and his new wife quarreled constantly. During frequent separations, Carl and his brother and Papa lived in boarding houses. But they never saw Papa except on Sundays, because he worked in his tailor shop like a man possessed to make money. 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. The very sight of his boy seemed to bring a black rage over him, and he became possessed with the idea that everyone was out to persecute him, to make his life unbearable. And yet, as I talked with Carl while gathering the material to write this script, I sensed that his little boy heart was proud of his tall, handsome father, even though he feared him. Carl's stuttering grew worse, and he fell a victim of fits of rage and fear. When his father refused to allow him to do something he wanted to do, he couldn't shout back at him the way he wanted to because the words just wouldn't come. And instead, this would happen.
You hurt me, Carl, and that is all there is to it. You go to the motion picture once a week, and that is enough. Money is not to burn.
But, Papa, I work for this money.
All the more reason to keep it. Money is to keep, to keep. Work for it, work for lots of it, then keep it to protect yourself.
But I promised to meet my friend.
They are wrong kind of friends if they throw their money away on foolishness. You are not to go. Do you hear me? And stop that. Do you hear me? Stop it! If you are going to throw one of those temper fits, that's the thing to do. Get out of my sight. Your father can stand so much. Go to your room and shut the door.
Carl's father fell ill of cancer and died when Carl was 13. His Aunt Mildred, whom he'd never liked and who'd never liked Carl, took him out of the sense of deep loyalty shown in most Jewish families. No child could have felt more unwanted. No one ever smiled at him, and bitter, pudgy, rebellious 13-year-old Carl Saget smiled at no one else. There was nothing to smile about. At 13, his self was mostly out of control. He stuttered miserably. He was afraid of crowds. He trembled every time he was called on to recite in school. He bolted his food at the table at his aunt's house so he could get away from the group around the table as soon as possible. He was overweight because he substituted large amounts of food for the love and affection he never received. And to top it all, like a drop of water on his head, Aunt Mildred indoctrinated him with her belief that he had caused his own father's death.
Just as sure as you're born, you're responsible for Harry's death.
But Aunt Mildred...
Don't Aunt Mildred me. You tormented him to death. You worried him and plagued him and pestered him until he got ulcers of the stomach and it turned into cancer.
No!
Yes! Oh, yes, you miserable little fat blob of humanity. You'll have to answer to the God of our fathers someday for the death of your own papa, my brother Harry.
Because it was Jewish tradition, Carl went to the synagogue twice a day for 11 months to pray after his father's death. He prayed in Hebrew as he was told to pray, understanding nothing, and being choked emotionally by a new fear of the God of his fathers because of the growing guilt complex within his young mind as his Aunt Mildred reminded him day after day that...
You're just as guilty of the death of your own papa as if you'd murdered him in cold blood.
In the neighborhood where Carl and his brother grew up, there was a racial mixture right in the block where he lived. And plus his aunt's accusations. He had gone to school often with this taunt ringing in his ears.
Jew! Jew! Christ killer! Christ killer! Jew! Jew! Christ killer! Christ killer!
The shapeless guilt feeling increased. Carl knew he had not intentionally killed his father, and yet as he grew older and learned something of the psychology of the human mind, he knew that he could have, unconsciously, wished his father dead. And...
My feeling of guilt grew and grew, grew. My high school days are nightmares to remember. I was obese. I stuttered. I felt inferior. I hated life. I had no friends at all.
And yet Carl graduated from high school with honors and during World War II held on a good job as a junior draftsman, although he hated it. In fact, he feels, and I agree, that he probably kept it because by then he hated himself so much and felt so guilty, he wanted to torture himself. And having very little mechanical ability, working on a drawing board was pure torment to him. This, of course, is known as masochism, the desire to satisfy the death wish in oneself. And Carl was a victim of it for sure. But he went each night to Wayne University Night School in an effort to correct his very faulty speech. It was torture to be alive to Carl Saget. His humiliation every time someone spoke to him was crushing. He would cross the street to avoid speaking to an acquaintance. But in the summer of 1946, while attending the speech clinic of Central Michigan College, one of the professors, recognizing Carl's unusual mental equipment, urged him to enter the college proper. He did. And he was graduated 4 years later, cum laude, a member of Kappa Delta Pi Educational Honorary Society, president of the Philosophy Club, and member of the Psychology and Speech Correction Club. Plus all this, he had worked his way entirely through college.
The years at Central were wonderful. I felt needed and loved for the first time in my life. I worked in the home of Mr. and Mrs. Gover of 1088 South College Street, Mount Pleasant, Michigan. And they were Christians, the first I had ever known personally. They loved me, and I would have died for them. I wanted to become a Christian, too, but I couldn't get things straight in my mind somehow.
Although the 4 years at college had been like heaven to Carl, on graduation day, the skies lowered and turned black the minute he set eyes on Aunt Mildred.
I suppose you think you'll lord it all over the rest of us now, particularly your poor brother Daniel, just because he didn't finish high school. Frankly, I'm surprised that you had enough brains to finish college.
Carl hated his entire family, but it was not all his family's fault, and resentments and hostility of the kind they shared are not as uncommon as they may seem to be. They run too often behind story after story that we brought you on Unshackled, and they clutter and scar the index of any doctor's case history files. But Carl received a graduate assistantship in the Department of Speech Science at Ohio State University in Columbus, and he began to work on his master's degree. And once more, away from his family, his speech improved and some of his hostile nature subsided, especially after he met Laura.
I've known you for almost a year now, Carl. Don't you ever relax and stop thinking all those deep thoughts? Say, you're going to ruin your eyes, dear. They look all red. And you said you couldn't read.
Laura.
Yes?
Do you care if I ruin my eyes?
Do I care?
Do you?
Why, yes, Carl. I wouldn't be seeing you so much if I didn't care.
Oh, Laura, I love you. I love you. I need you with me all the time. everything would be fine if I just had you with me, Laura.
Laura, although she was genuinely fond of Carl, rejected him. As he explains it, a minus cancels a plus. And there were more minuses against him than there were pluses in his favor.
She liked my company. That was a plus. She admired my mind. That was a plus. She thought my hair was cute. That was a plus.
But Carl was Jewish. That was a minus. He had a speech defect. That was another minus. His eyes were going bad. Another minus. He had no money. And beside all this, her parents objected to him. The minuses outnumbered the pluses. Carl left Ohio State University just short of receiving his master's degree, completely crushed and brokenhearted. Someone had almost wanted him. And in this defeated, painful state, he began to teach speech correction to high school students with defective speech. He was considered a success as a teacher, but with all his education and his command of his subject, Carl Saget had no command of himself.
Quiet! Quiet!
Who do you think you are? You can't talk no better than we can.
Quiet! Be quiet!
Down.
In complete humiliation and carrying a weight of failure so heavy that only those who've carried it can know how it galls, Carl Saget fled this teaching job for days at a time, shutting himself away in his room and walking for miles on end, speaking to no one but trembling bodily from the volcano of hate and bitterness and humiliation that erupted within him. With no outlet except hours of sobbing and minutes of blind rage and fury.
Don't you forget the God of our fathers holds you responsible for your own father's death, just as sure as if you murdered him.
God, where is the God of my father? Where?
He spent hours reading the Old Testament. Thou shalt not hate your brother in your heart. Thou shalt not take vengeance nor bear any grudge against the sons of your own people. Blessed are those whose way is blameless, who walk in the law of the Lord.
And cursed is he who does not love God. I hate my family. I can't walk in the law of the Lord. I'm too weak. I can't do it. I can't keep his laws. Oh, God, I beseech thee, save my life.
A prayer from the depths of his being. But he had to cry out in a very loud voice because the God of his father seemed so far away. But his fathers did worship the one true God, the God of Abraham. And that God, the same father of Jesus Christ, heard this heartbroken young son of Abraham calling out for help. At the end of the school year, Carl went to Chicago to try his luck once more. He was so hostile and nervous that he had 4 jobs in 3 weeks. Carl Saget, just 25 years old, educated, brilliant, was coming to the end fast. And after quitting the 4th job at noon one day, he wandered into the darkened, empty chapel of the Pacific Garden Mission to wait alone until 4 o'clock when he could pick up his last check. He was afraid to walk the streets, and his suicide impulse was so strong that he'd long since stopped going anywhere that meant crossing a bridge. He remembered the Christian friends from college days. and he felt he'd be safe somehow to sit alone in this Christian mission chapel. But he was not alone.
Hello? Oh, I didn't see anyone here.
I was just resting a minute.
Quiet here.
With the peace that passeth understanding.
The minute slipped by, and gradually, the young man with the quiet voice who'd been resting in the mission chapel opened the Old Testament, the word of God to Carl's people before Christ was born. He was reading words from the prophet Isaiah that had had little or no meaning to Carl Sagitt before that moment.
He is despised and rejected of men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And we hid, as it were, our faces from him. He was despised, and we esteemed him not. Surely he hath borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. He was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement of our peace was upon him, and with his stripes we are healed. All we, like sheep, have gone astray. We have turned everyone to his own way, and the Lord hath laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed, and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. He is brought as a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before her shearers is dumb, so he opened not his mouth.
That was Jesus?
That was Jesus. You feel awfully sorry for yourself, don't you, Carl?
I'm very hostile because I'm a failure. Yes, I pity myself.
He was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. The cross of Christ cancels self-pity.
I'm a Jew.
Jesus Christ was a Jew. A real Christian is just a fulfilled Jew, Carl.
You believe Jesus is the Messiah?
I know he is. Jesus and the Father are one. God was in Christ reconciling the world to himself. He was in the world, and even though the world was made by him, still the world knew him not. He came unto his own people, your people, Carl, and his own received him not. But listen, there is good news. As many as received him, to them gave he power to become the sons of God. Your father stumbled and cried out under the heavy yoke of trying to keep the law of God. God saw this and came himself as Jesus Christ, who by grace offers to walk with us in a yoke that's easy under a burden that's light. I've tried it, Carl. I know it's true.
But I am a Jew.
A Christian is merely a fulfilled Jew, Carl. But don't take my word for it. Why not try Jesus for yourself? Right now.
All right. I will try for myself right now. I will pray to Christ and find out for myself if he is the way to God the Father.
Carl Sagitt found that Jesus is the way to the Father. It's simpler for a Jew to grasp the true meaning of the atonement made for our sins by Jesus as he hung on the cross of Calvary. The religious heritage of the Jew is blessed and rich. It prepares the soul and the heart and the spirit of an individual for the coming of the Messiah to his life. And there is no relationship more dynamic or more contagious than the coming together at last of one of God's chosen people of Israel with the living person of Jesus Christ, the Messiah, who, through the centuries, continues to prove that what he dared to say of himself is true.
Before Abraham was, I am. I and the Father are one. No man cometh unto the Father but by me. And him who cometh unto me, I will in no wise cast out.
As the radiant presence of Carl Sagan himself in our studio has proven to all of us, the human ego can be transformed completely when it is surrendered into the hands of the living Christ. Carl lost his ego control, his self-control, neuroses developed. Then he placed that self at the cross of Jesus Christ and found it miraculously transformed. He's safe now because his personality is Christ-controlled. As Carl himself says,
I don't own myself anymore. I belong to Jesus. He's taking my burdens and my resentments. And as fast as I let another one go, my speech improves still more. People love me again. I love people again. I'm interested in the world and everybody in it.
And if you want to talk to Carl Sagan yourself, you'll find him interested in you. You may contact this radiant young man through the Pacific Garden Mission, Chicago 5, Illinois. Your letters will be forwarded to Carl. We urge you to contact him if your life in any way parallels his. And if you have not had the Pacific Garden Mission's time-proven documentary film, Out of the Night, in your church or service club, may we suggest you do so right away. Our producer, Eugenia Price, spoke in a Chicago church not long ago where she met a successful businessman whose entire life had been changed when he turned to Jesus Christ as a result of seeing Out of the Night, the Pacific Garden Mission's gripping documentary motion picture filmed in natural color right on Chicago's Skid Row. If you have not presented this film in your area, write at once for information to the Pacific Garden Mission, Chicago 5, Illinois. That's the Pacific Garden Mission, Chicago 5, Illinois. Heard in the Carl Sagan story were Muriel Monsell Bremner as Eugenia Price and Sam Siegel as Carl Sagan, with Norman Gottschalk, Lucille Laurel, Charles Flynn, Cornelius Peoples, and Mary Skoll. Original music, Lucille Becker. Sound, George Kutz. Engineering, Paul Crum. Carl Sagan told his story to our producer, Eugenia Price, who wrote and directed the script. And now this is Harry Elders reminding you that we will keep this great broadcast coming your way just as long as you keep your prayers, your contributions, and your letters coming our way.